the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
Very good afternoon to you. It is the Queen's birthday public holiday for many of you around Victoria today. A lot of you are still working, like myself. Shout out to you as well. But the great thing about the Queen's birthday is the honours list that has been released. And today you'll meet two people who are on it. Professor Tim Reeves, AM, has been awarded an Australian medal today on, and we'll hear from basically his lifetime in agriculture on the program shortly. It's a very long and impressive list. We'll go through all of those details shortly. And Catherine Marriott, OAM, has been announced today too, has been involved in agriculture right around the country in many different forms and has been at the coalface of a lot of major issues as well, including the Black Summer bushfires, in which we were speaking to her when I was filling in for Macca a few times. So we'll go through all of those details and a lot more today on the program. If there's someone you think deserves a shout-out, you can always send us a text as well. And I want you to settle a debate today on the program. We are going to go to the Casterton Kelpie Muster. It's been on all weekend. Big prices paid for dogs. We've got some details for you coming up later in the program today. Has led me to ask one of the biggest questions in Australian agriculture, and I would love you to tell me which way you sit on the fence here. There's no in the middle here. You've got to decide which breed of dog is better, the Kelpie or the Border Collie? Border Collie or Kelpie? There's two options here. I want to know which one you think is better. You can send us a text today. I'll tell you how the poll's going as well. 0467 842 722. If you want to ring and state your case for either the Kelpie or the Border Collie, 1300 977 222. This is the Country Hour. I won't ask Peter Somerville about which way he sits on this fence, but I will ask him to present rural news. Good afternoon, Peter.
Thanks, Woz. Making news today, dairy companies continue to raise their milk prices in the lead up to the new season. Milk processors must publish their minimum opening milk price by the 1st of June. But since then, there's been a stream of price increases as companies compete with each other for milk. Over the weekend, Buller lifted its price for the second time since its opening to between $8.90 and $9.50 per kilogram of milk solids, and dairy giant Saputo raised its opening milk price to join rival Fonterra on $8.80 per kilogram of milk solids. The companies will start paying the new price from the 1st of July. The new Shadow Assistant Minister for Trade, Rick Wilson, says Australia needs to continue diversifying its export and import markets and not rely on China. The WA Liberal MP retained his seat of O'Connor in the recent election despite a 9% swing to Labor. Rick Wilson says despite trying to improve relations with China, he thinks the new government should be looking to continue down the path of finding new markets.
Now that we've got a new government, certainly they've showed much greater sympathy than perhaps people on our side of politics did. There are still incidents occurring, including a very serious incident involving an RAAF reconnaissance plane in the South China Sea. I'm not sure that, you know, we can continue to blame the Morrison government for incidents like this for time immemorial. But I guess the substance of the question is about the China trade situation. And I think the China Free Trade Agreement is almost a victim of its own success. It's been so successful that we have become very dependent on the Chinese market, not only for our exports, but of course also for the import of vital agricultural products, certain fertilisers such as urea, but also, you know, much of our chemical comes out of China as well. So we've become very dependent on the China market. I think part of trade policy going forward needs to be to diversify our markets and diversify our imports from a strategic perspective as much as anything.
The country's largest integrated cattle and beef producer, the Australian Agricultural Company, is investigating carbon farming across its footprint of more than 6 million hectares. The company says the program is part of its goal to be what it terms nature positive, which includes setting and hitting carbon and biodiversity targets. AA co-head of environment and sustainability, Naomi Wilson, says there are challenges with little data currently available on carbon farming in the low rainfall or boom-bust climates of northern Australia. But the company is still focused on reducing carbon and earning money from carbon farming.
I guess the ideal is both. So looking at what we can do in our production system to bring down our emissions profile. So we're looking at opportunities to reduce particularly methane emissions in our production system. And then, you know, where we can't bring those emissions down, what can we do in terms of sequestration? So that's the first part of the equation. And then what can we do beyond that offsetting component that actually generates revenue? So I guess trying to achieve both of those outcomes with our carbon program.
And today, being the Queen's Birthday public holiday, a pioneer in rebuilding rainforest in coastal areas of New South Wales has been awarded an Order of Australia medal. 71-year-old Sue Baker founded her local bush care group in 1999. It has since regenerated almost 10 kilometres of coastline on the New South Wales mid-north coast. Sue says she and the other volunteers have made a big difference to the landscape.
Along the edge of the lagoon here, there was a narrow strip of littoral, that means coastal, rainforest with huge gaps in a canopy. In a rainforest, as you know, you should have a closed canopy. Patch over here that had nothing on it. I have a photo of one of my volunteers standing there surrounded by no plants whatsoever. Yes, so we've put in several thousand plants here. Mm. We've almost got a closed canopy. It's been wonderful to see all the little birds return. And what we've actually done is by planting out the edges and the canopy gaps and the bare areas, we've expanded the size of the littoral rainforest, which is a really great thing considering that it's a highly endangered community.
And still on the honours list, a 92-year-old Southern Tasmanian cattle farmer has been awarded an Order of Australia medal for her lifetime of work volunteering for various organisations, including the Country Women's Association. Billy Joan Ridler has never stopped volunteering and makes special deliveries to nursing homes on important days.
I started to take bunches of flowers when it was their birthday. A little cheap card, a cake of soap or a lavender bag, a bunch of flowers. And this particular day, this is going back years, this fellow said to me, "You never bring the men any flowers." I said, "I never thought you'd like them." He said, "Oh, I'd love a bunch of flowers." That's how I start to do the men too. And I work at the op shop and library. All the money we make goes back into the community.
And Warwick, flowers to you. That's Rural News.
Oh, thanks, Pete. Peter Somerville there with Rural News. Wonderful to hear about some of the award winners today in the Queen's Birthday Honours List. We'll hear from some more winners on our program shortly. In fact, we're about to go there right now. Before, though, been asking the big question today, burning question today, in light of going to Casterton to talk Kelpies later on in our program, Kelpie or Border Collie? What's better? No sitting on the fence. Kelpie or Border Collie? You can send us a text 0467 842 722. If you are online, I am running a Twitter poll. I'll tell you how things are looking later on. A couple of texts. This one says Kelpie. Another one says Kelpie Border Collie cross. Which part of the cross is the better part? I ask you, anonymous texter. Gavin says surely Border Collie for being pretty. Kelpie for low maintenance. I'm fence sitting. Pity about the barbed wire, says Gavin. No, pick a side, Gavin. Definitely the Kelpie is best, says Sue in Redcliffe's. Sue knows what she's doing. Thank you very much for your text. Tell me what you think's better, Kelpie or Border Collie today, 1300 977 222, or text 0467 842 722.
The Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
You're listening to the Country Hour, and I said we'll continue along the Queen's Birthday Honours List, and that's exactly what we'll do now, with an AEM being awarded to Professor Tim Reeves, who is, well, currently the professor in residence at Melbourne University's Dookie campus. But if we're honest, his career and life in agriculture has been a lot longer than that. In fact, you get this little printout when the honours list comes out from the authorities, and it lists people's achievements, what they've done in their life, some of the boards or groups or jobs that they've had over their career. And Professor Reeves, yours is 3 pages long. It's an incredible read. What a lifetime in agriculture you've had.
Yes, Warwick, it's been, you know, a long and amazing career. And you mentioned Dookie. Well, my career started at Rutherglen, and I've sort of almost come full circle being back in northern Victoria.
You've been part of everything, it seems, though, in terms of academia, but also the putting research on the ground, either in Australia or internationally as well. When you look back at your career, What was the most fun role you've had, or the most important role you think you've had?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Warwick. Certainly the excitement of what I call the sort of golden age of agronomy, 1970s, 1980s, into the 90s, and being involved with the very first research, the first plots that went in the ground on direct drilling, zero tillage, and the introduction of new crops, lupins and canola, and how they all fitted together in farming systems. I mean, that was about as exciting as it gets, because now those practices are just commonplace across Australian cropping areas. But I suppose the pinnacle of my career was being Director General of CIMMYT, the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Centre, based in Mexico. We were funded by the richer countries of the world, including Australia, to help some of the poorer countries of the world in relation to food security around those two important food crops, wheat and maize. And we worked in over 100 developing countries around the world. And, you know, being Director General of that was amazing. I was honoured to have as my emeritus advisor the great Norman Borlaug, Nobel Peace Laureate. And, yeah, so it's been an exciting journey, but, you know, I'm really enjoying the last few years of passing on what I've learned to the next generations.
Is that part of the exciting thing of getting older, Tim Reeves, is that you get to see the beginning of research in things like zero-till all the way through to becoming, you know, the accepted farming practice for well, probably a majority of grain growers?
Absolutely. I think it's estimated something like 90% of the Australian crop area is put in by conservation agriculture, zero tillage now. Yeah, there's quite a lot of advantages in getting older and seeing things come into practice, of seeing cycles. I mean, one thing I've learned is that sustainability is a moving target. There's not one, oh, yes, we've got the system, it's perfect, bum. No, we're going to have to be changing, adapting all of the time. And so the importance of research, the importance of new technologies is absolutely critical. And, you know, obviously I've been looking in the bigger picture around the world of humankind's greatest challenge to me, and that is food and nutritional security. And it's in the headlines right now. And our challenge globally is, you know, how to feed the world but not wreck the planet at the same time. And then you've got to bring that back down to what that means for an individual farmer here in Australia.
So what drew you towards conservation agriculture? Because you see this theme through a lot of your research. You see it through a lot of the groups you worked with, United Nations, on such things as well, and looking at impacts of climate change. Where did that passion spark for you?
Well, I really came from those early days of realising, you know, that, yes, we had to have productive and profitable systems, but they had to be sustainable. You know, you can't mine soil health. You can't build up pesticide, herbicide resistance and have sustainable systems. And so the real challenge is that we need to do two things simultaneously. We have to increase productivity, and I'm talking about in Australia and globally, to feed the world. I mean, global population is still growing at about 160 people per minute. They don't all have to have cars and TVs, but they all have to eat. And we know that the systems to produce that food are under challenge. And we're seeing it right now, the combinations of the terrible conflict in Ukraine, but associated with the pandemic, associated with climate change, and realise that the things we took for granted, like full supermarket shelves all the time, are no longer can we take them for granted. So as I say, what I've learned is that sustainability is a moving target. If it's business as usual, your business in decline.
So what is the areas you'd like to see research or advancements made in agriculture going forward from here?
So I think the real challenge that I would put right at the front is to restore soil health across Australia and indeed across most of the farming lands of the world. Here in Australia, we've been mining soil carbon, we're mining soil organic nitrogen, and that just means that we have to put more and more costly, energy-rich and increasingly risky inputs into our system. So we need to look at restoring soil carbon, soil organic matter, going back to what we were very good at one stage, biological nitrogen fixation with legumes, legume-based pastures, legume crops. It now makes, you know, with the cost of fertilizer where it is, it now makes even more sense. So certainly I would be tackling it from the soil upwards, looking at greater input use efficiency, but it's really in the sort of sustainable intensification systems I'm talking about, it is the combinations of conservation agriculture, healthier soils, better water management, using the best varieties and livestock in the systems, integrated pest management. They're all important by themselves. But what we have found is that when you put them together, the whole's greater than the sum of the parts. We're getting these synergistic effects. And that's really the challenge of putting these systems together rather than one thing or another.
Can still hear that passion in your voice. For significant service to sustainable agriculture research and production, Professor Timothy Gerald Reeves AM. What does that mean to you?
Look, it means it means a huge amount. I really do feel honoured and privileged. I think of all the great people that I've worked with across the world, both farmers and scientists. And I think of my wonderful family who've supported me all the way through. No, it's just a great honour.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And obviously, it's not the end of anything. You're still as passionate as ever, and you are the Professor in Residence at Dookie Campus for Melbourne University. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Warwick.
Professor Tim Reeves there, AM today in the Queen's Birthday Honours list. Let's go to another award winner, Miss Catherine Marriott for Service to Primary Industry and to Regional Development. Can join you on the phone now. Kath Marriott, welcome to the country.
Thank you very much, Warwick.
You gave out a little squeal when you heard that Tim Reeves was on before you as an award winner. So it must be nice to hear about other awards today too. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so pleased for Tim. He's such a legend, and it's just so lovely that he's been recognised. Yeah, it's awesome.
Let's talk about your career now, though, too, in agriculture. Not quite as long as Tim Reeves, but gosh, you've moved around Australia and been, I suppose, at the forefront of a lot of huge issues affecting areas of regional Australia, either being in the Kimberley and the Northern Australia during some big issues for live export and cattle producing there, or being down here when fires were roaring through a community you decided to call home during the Black Summer bushfires. You've been at the forefront of, well, communities facing a lot of major issues.
Yeah, look, Warwick, I think I've been very fortunate in my career in that I have been able to live and work with some really extraordinary people. You know, from up the work that I was doing up in Southeast Asia in the beef industry was just like an extraordinary gift. I guess probably what I have done my whole career is look at where are the gaps and then how can I use my skills, bring people together to, you know, solve a challenge or take advantage of an opportunity. So, yeah, I've had a wonderful, varied career and as a result met some fantastic people right across Australia and Asia.
What have been the most challenging times?
Oh, dear. Well, there's been a few of those. I suppose they're character building, aren't they? I think, you know, we so often go through life thinking that everything needs to be rosy, but without the challenging times that you have, you don't get to appreciate the good times. So I've had lots of different challenges. The bushfires was particularly challenging because people that I knew and loved had lost everything. Following the live export suspension, I watched a lot of my best friends like just be down to their knees from a business perspective, but also from an industry perspective, which had real human interaction. Sorry, a truck's just about to go past me.
That's all right. We know you're still busy then.
Up in the Kimberley working with pastoralists, and now obviously I'm absolutely loving being down working with the team at Riverine Plains back in my home region.
Yeah, it's a cropping organisation looking at a lot of research and putting things on the ground there. We're asking Tim Reeves about the work still to be done. What's the work that's still to be done for you?
Oh, there's so much. So Riverine Plains is the most extraordinary organisation. It's had a 22-year history. And I was lucky enough to take on the leadership role at this time. So it's got really well-established reputation, members and team. And traditionally, Riv Plains has serviced their members through soils and grains research. And I guess what we're looking at doing now is how do we actually add more value to our members by diversifying and doing anything that will build prosperity in their businesses. So we're moving into what sort of business support they might need, whether that's succession planning seminars, grain marketing seminars or panels, that sort of thing. We've also got a few livestock projects with the Victorian Drought Hub, which is where I work with Tim. So that's very exciting. And I think agriculture, Warwick, is just the most extraordinary industry to be involved in, because not only have you got extraordinary, generous, contributing, passionate people, but you're also really making a difference. You know, as Tim said, everybody on the planet needs to eat, and agriculture is at the root of that. Not to mention, you know, caring for the environment, and farmers also are at the forefront of that. So to be playing some small part in tying all of that together and bringing people together to make a difference to the planet is such a privilege, I reckon.
You're a pretty busy person though, because not only do you do that, that's your day job, you're also part of the Rural Women's Alumni in Victoria, Murray Local Land Service, you're so cross-border by the way, on a New South Wales board and a Victorian board, and as well as a Rural Banks Advisory Board member. What keeps you involved and what makes you to want to do the extra things, be involved in these extra groups?
Look, I think I get real joy out of contributing. And if I can use my networks, if I can use my skills to make a difference and further something that's going to ultimately contribute to rural Australia and the happiness and the prosperity of rural Australia, then maybe selfishly that actually makes it a better place for me to live. So, you know, I guess you see opportunities, and I think in life we all want to have a purpose. We all want to, feel valued. And if I can contribute and make a difference and somebody acknowledges or recognises that in some even tiny way, then it's been a day well spent. If I can make somebody smile a day, if one person smiles a day because of something that I've done or a smile that I've had or something that I've said or a way I've contributed, then I've lived a very rich life.
Catherine Marriott OAM. How does that feel?
Oh, dear. I just keep giggling. I mean, what an extraordinary honour. You know, so often in life you just go through and you do things that need to be done. But to understand that you've had a small impact on somebody who's obviously nominated me is, you know, it's quite overwhelming, really, to be honest. You don't do things to get an award. You do things because they need doing. So it's, I haven't quite wrapped my head around it all yet, but I'm very delighted and quite overwhelmed.
I was speaking to Tim Reeves just before we came to an air, and he was saying, oh, my phone hasn't stopped all day. I'm talking to friends I haven't spoken to in years. Is it the same for you?
Yeah, it is. It's really delightful. I've got about 300 texts on my phone, actually, 340 or something. I've been driving up from the Dandenongs with my mum for the weekend, so I haven't had a chance to get back to anybody yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll let you do that. Just before we let you go, can you weigh in on our favourite poll question for the day, Kelpie or Border Collie?
Oh,
do you
have Kelpie's all the way. Kelpie's all the way.
Well, thanks for being involved in that, and congratulations on your award. Well done.
Oh, thank you so much, Warwick, for having me.
Catherine Marriott speaking to you there. OAM under the awards today. You also heard from Professor Tim Reeves. AM today, just a couple of the extraordinary people that have been listed as under the Queen's Birthday Honours list, which has been released today. And it is one of the fun days in the job, reading about extraordinary people and some of the impacts that they've had, not only on agriculture, but communities and regional communities around Australia. It is really a great joy. And I did ask Catherine Marriott about Kelpies versus Border Collies, because we're talking about that today. We're about to head to Casterton to hear more about that. That's obviously all about Kelpies. But I want to know what's better, Kelpies or Border Collies. Send me a text, 0467 842 722. I'm running a poll. I'll be able to update you on sort of what the wider numbers are doing, but you can get your vote in. Send a text, 0467 842 722. Let's be a little bit more serious now, though, and head to the newsroom and find out what's making news around regional Victoria this lunchtime before we head off to the Weather Bureau. Tyrone Dalton has the news information for you this afternoon. Good afternoon, Tyrone.
Good afternoon, Woz. A Cobden man will appear in court tomorrow over the crash that killed his 18-year-old passenger. The crash occurred at Cobden in the early hours of June the 5th, and police arrested the 25-year-old driver on Friday. He's been in custody since and is charged with dangerous driving, causing death, careless driving, and failing to give way at a stop sign. Two other men from the same vehicle were taken to hospital with serious injuries, while the female driver of the other vehicle was taken to hospital as a precaution. The Royal Melbourne Hospital says a Maryborough teenager's condition has improved after he fell from a friend's ute around midnight on Saturday. The 18-year-old man was flown to hospital in a critical condition, but is now in a serious but stable condition. An 18-year-old Denali man who handed himself into police yesterday is expected to be charged with dangerous driving causing serious injury. Police say the Maryborough man was standing in the tray of the ute, which was driving along Hill Street, when he fell. Another offshore wind farm is in development off the Gippsland coast. Cryo Generation wants to build a 2.5 gigawatt wind farm 22 kilometres off the coast of the Wellington Shire. It comes after the state government unveiled new legislation to encourage 9 gigawatts of offshore wind generation by 2040. A Rutherglen winery owner says he had hoped to see a bigger crowd at this year's Winery Walkabout event. The event pulled a pre-COVID crowd of about 16,000 people, but only about 10,000 tickets were sold this year despite COVID-related cancellations in 2020 and 2021. Buller Wines owner Gerald Judd said he's worked the event for 9 years and hadn't expected it to be a quiet year. But winemakers of Rutherglen executive officer Annalie Nolan says the smaller return was welcome as many businesses struggled to get more staff. That's the latest in news from across regional Victoria. For more local news anytime, you can search online for your nearest ABC bureau. Back to you, Woz.
Thanks very much for that, Tyrone. Tyrone Dalton there with regional news headlines asking Kelpie versus Border Collie. I like this text. That's like Ford and Holden, was it? It is. And everyone had a side on that. So you've got to text your side. 0467 842 722. Deb says, hi, Warwick. Marking calves today. The girls aren't happy. They're coming in. And Kelpie, less grass seed problems. That's Deb's view. Deb, love that you picked a side. Thank you for that. Another one for Kelpies. This one saying, I had a Kelpie Border Collie for 14 years. Never did a day's work in his life. Rest in peace at Zas. Great dog name. Thank you. I love my Border Collie, so I have to go with him. The text sort of stops halfway through, but that's enough. I love my Border Collie, so I have to go with him. Love that. I rescued a Border Collie, which had been badly treated. Bert was his name, and had my first child, and Bert sat by the pram constantly in our bush block. He always had a smiley face, says Joy in Langwarri. Joy, that is just gorgeous. Thank you very much for that text. Keep them coming. Tell us if you're a Border Collie or a Kelpie person. Simple question today. That's all I'm asking. One or the other? You can't sit on the fence. Mark Analak is the senior forecaster at the Weather Bureau, and he can take us through the forecast. You can't sit on the on the fence for the forecast either, can you, Mark?
Oh, I could try to. a bit of everything.
No, we have none of that. What about Kelpies or Border Collies? Do you have a pick?
Oh, jeepers. Oh, I could get myself into a lot of trouble with my family listening in right now. I'm saying Border Collie.
Why?
I think they're a cute dog. Oh, I know we had family members who had Kelpies, so they love their Kelpie, but I'm a Border Collie man, I reckon.
Oh, and I applaud you for taking a side. That's all I ask. I don't need to question you about it. We just want the side. Mark, weather-wise, what are we looking at today?
Look, finally, the showers are starting to clear up, and we're looking across the state. Yes, there's still a bit of cloud around, but the cloud trying to break up. We get a bit of blue sky here and there, and I think for the rest of today, we should be mostly fine. North of the Divide, yep, it's fine, but for southern parts of the state, Weatherwatch radar still got some very, very light showers trying to push up over the coast, but really It's mostly around the sort of Mornington Peninsula area, but really there's not much in it. So for the most part, we're looking at fine conditions for the rest of today and into the early part of tomorrow. There is another system making its way, another low pressure system making its way across the Bight, and as that low pressure system approaches, we'll see the winds turn northerly overnight tonight and tomorrow, and start to freshen in the west, particularly about the southwest district and central districts coming up over the top of the hills there. So freshening northerly winds from the west tomorrow should be a fine day across the state. We might start to see some cloud increasing and an odd shower pop up later in the day. But for the most part, it should be fine across Victoria tomorrow, apart from those odd little showers here and there. And then on Wednesday, that low pressure system will track across Bass Strait, and we're more likely to see showers extend across Victoria during Wednesday, Thursday, as that low pressure system moves into the Tasman. Showers returning to the state mostly on Wednesday and Thursday. Not a huge amount in it. Rainfall totals generally sort of looking at less than 10 millimetres. Maybe there might be the odd place here and there that might get a little bit more, but probably just enough to keep the ground damp rather than seeing any huge impacts from that rainfall. And then looking towards the weekend, some good news there. The high pressure system looks like it'll become the dominant feature, which means we'll see a clearing of showers and return to mostly fine conditions through the weekend. So at this stage, a couple of fine days coming, the rest of today and into tomorrow, but another system moving through, bringing further showers for sort of Wednesday, Thursday, Warwick.
And not that anyone ever needs a reason to dislike a weatherman more, but can I tell you, Mark, your vote for Border Collie has just put it one in the lead for our text message line so far.
Sorry, Kelpie fan.
Yeah, there you go. Take that, Kelpies. Any sort of warnings, I suppose, over the next 24 hours before I let you go? I better be serious.
No, mate. Thankfully, we've got coastal waters. I think there's a metro. We've got those northerly winds will strengthen later tomorrow, and we do have strong wind warnings out for that for the sort of western central and Port Phillip. But other than that, no land-based warnings at this stage.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for that, Mark.
Okay, see ya.
Mark Analak, Senior Forecaster at the Weather Bureau. Before we head back to a few more stories, just a couple of your comments. I love this from Ned at Hexham, which has evened things up again. Hi, Woz. We have a very stubborn, willful collie. So I would definitely vote one, Kelpie. Says Ned at Hexham. Thank you very much for that, Ned. Joe from the Grampians, you're sitting on the fence. We've had border collies, kelpies and everything in between, and they've all been good, says Joe. Joe, no one's questioning that dogs aren't good. We all know dogs are good, but you got to pick one. Shovel says, I'm a Holden Kelpie man. I like that, Shovel. Well done. I've had border collies all of my life. They get my vote, says Ian. Border collie all the way was a beautiful dogs and good workers, says Stuart at Ballarat. Kelpie all the way, says Heather. Border collie, says Angus at Woodend. And Ness, oh, shout out to you, Ness, at Dargo. Kelpie, I'm working with six at Dargo at the moment. Does that give you six votes for Kelpie? I don't know, but well, good luck with the working anyway. I bet they're making the job a little bit better. Keep the text coming through. We'd love to hear which way you sit. Kelpies, border collies, simple question today. We also have a lot of rural news and information to get through on the country. So as we head to our story from Casterton, let's talk about, well, what's safe that you're storing guns in if you are a gun owner in regional and rural Australia. Timber gun safes will become a thing of the past when new gun storage equipment requirements come into force in August. Victoria Police have advised the new requirements take effect on August the 30th, and leading Senior Constable Stuart Jones is the Divisional Firearms Officer for Wellington and East Gippsland. He spoke to Peter Somerville about some of those changes, including the fact that timber gun safes are no longer allowed. I didn't know they were allowed in the first place, but here are the details.
Yeah, 30th of August it comes in. They need to be stored in a purpose-built cabinet, and it's got to be 1.6 millimetres thick and bolted to the premises so that it's not easily removable.
What does that mean? What's a purpose-built cabinet, and what does that compare to? What are people using?
Oh, mostly gun safes. A commercially built gun safe is the best way to go. It's, well, you know it's going to comply when you've got it, and you don't have to worry about it. And that's the way it's been pushed. And it's been industry pushed for some time, and the amendments came in for that in August last year, and they come into effect August this year, end of August.
Will a lot of people need to update their safes? Are many people using sort of homemade safes or safes that wouldn't comply?
Yes, there's a lot of people that have compliant safes now. The old rule, or the current rule, is hardwood or steel are not easily penetrable. So there's a lot of people with hardwood cabinets and old school lockers and that sort of thing that need to be updated.
Where has this change come from? Why has it come about?
It's been industry pushed for some time. We were having a number of firearms burglaries right across the state, and I think that's part of what's pushed it along a bit.
And are those rates still high? Is it still a concern?
In some areas, it sort of comes and goes in waves, I guess. At the moment, we're going along pretty well, but from time to time it picks up, and we'll have quite a few in a very short space of time.
And even with sort of pushing everyone towards having thick metal gun safes, so many people have cordless angle grinders now. Is that sort of thing still a problem for you? Can you eliminate this problem?
I don't think we can eliminate that problem so much. It doesn't matter how thick your safe is. If someone wants to get into it, they're going to get into it if they've got the time and the ability. So we sort of try and set something that's reasonable for everyone to attain, a reasonable standard, as well as sort of obviously being a very good preventative measure as well.
What's your advice to people? How do they best make sure that they're safe and their storage complies with the rules?
Best bet is to sort of take a look at it. Like I've said earlier, 1.6 millimetres thick steel bolted to the premises, so it's not easily removable, purpose-built, which is important, and a lock of sturdy construction on it as well. So that's a good start. I'd like to say give me a call, I'll come and have a look, but I've got a lot of people to inspect over the time. So if you stick to that, maybe go to the gun shop, have a chat to them at the gun shop, and maybe purchase a safe if you're not sure.
That's leading Senior Constable Stuart Jones speaking with Peter Somerville. And if you want more information on the new requirements, you can head to the Victoria Police website. But those new requirements for the storage of guns comes into place from August the 30th. So there is your warning there. You're listening to The Country. Many texts still coming in. Kelpies versus Border Collies at the moment. The Border Collies are in front just on the text message poll today, looking at what's the better dog, Kelpie or Border Collie. This one says, Kelpie, never stop working, love their job, never complain, and a great family dog. This one says, hi, Warwick, sorry, but we would be fence sitters. The best cattle dog we ever had was a Border Collie cross. Mac could read our minds. He was just so smart, says Ruth from rural Lee and Gather. Ruth, but see, you said Border Collie cross, so that gives it to Border Collie, surely, doesn't it? Another one saying, I love Kelpies, especially Pippa, Lizzie, the two Kelpies here at Barfold, says Pam. And I love this. G'day, Warwick. I had a blue heeler, Border Collie, and a Border Collie cross Kelpie. The Border Collie, Candy, would round up our sons when they were doing something they shouldn't. On one occasion, I heard the dog barking constantly, and when I checked the barking, she had rounded up my preschool child who wasn't allowed to cross the road, but he did, and Candy was circling around him and barking. Border Collie is my choice. However, each dog we've had was wonderful for our sons and myself, says Denny in Mildura. Love that text. Thanks very much for that, Denny. Keep the votes coming. Kelpie or Border Collie? You can call if you want, 1300 977 222, or you can text 0467 842 722. Last year, Australia was the world's largest exporter of gas, with just over 80 million tonnes of LNG shipped out of the country. But are Australians getting a proper slice of this boom? As gas prices soar on the East Coast, there's a growing call to reform the way resource companies are taxed, as Dan Fitzgerald reports.
Oil and gas are natural resources that are owned by all Australians. So the theory goes that if a company wants to extract that resource and sell it, Australians should receive a share of the profit. To make this happen, the Petroleum Resource Rent Tax was introduced to levy offshore oil and gas producers on top of their regular income tax.
It's what we call a super profits tax. So it's designed for those resources that generate super profits. So at a particular level of profitability, that's what triggers the tax, and hence we call it the super profits tax.
Dr. Diane Krall is a senior lecturer of business law and taxation at Monash University. She's been researching reform of the PRRT since 2016 and says that the $800 million collected by the tax in the last financial year is pretty small in the scheme of things.
It's nothing. It's such a minor amount of revenue for such a large resource.
In the March budget, Treasury estimated the PRRT would collect around $1.6 billion in the next financial year, only slightly more than 20 years ago, when just $1.3 billion was taken by the tax, while over the same period, gas exports have soared.
The PRRT is simply not working.
That's outgoing South Australian Independent Senator Rex Patrick.
We don't get anywhere near the return for our finite gas resources than other countries. And a good example of that is Qatar. Qatar, in 2021, exported around about the same amount of LNG as Australia did and got $26.6 billion in royalties, and Australia got only $800 million. Something is very wrong.
Dr. Diane Krall believes while the PRRT worked for oil extraction, it's an ineffective tax for the offshore gas industry.
Gas is more capital intensive. It is not a commodity that generates super profits, and so it's not suitable to be taxed under the PRRT regime, and that is the problem. That is the current problem. So basically we're now extracting gas, oil has been depleted, and we're using an inappropriate tax mechanism to generate tax from that particular resource.
Dr. Diane Krall says the largest share of the PRRT is currently being paid by two oil producers in the Bass Strait.
So those that are missing from the list of PRRT payers are companies such as Chevron, INPEX, Woodside, Shell, Mitsubishi and Mitsui. Those are the big players, and they have not paid any PRRT on their projects. And their projects are, for instance, the Gorgon Wheatstone project, the Ichthys project, Northwest Shelf, the Prelude project. They're all large projects that have now been operating since about 2010, 2012, and were still waiting for PRRT from those large projects.
As coal-fired power plants struggle to meet demand on the East Coast, electricity companies are having to rely on gas, which, due to the war in Ukraine, has rocketed to extremely high prices. Senator Rex Patrick again.
Right now, we face a double whammy. We have a situation where most of the gas is exported overseas, and that drives our price up. We end up paying whatever the international price is, and we also get no return. So we lose twice.
In a statement, the oil and gas industry's lobby group, APIA, says
the PRRT, which is a tax on gas company profits, has been reviewed four times since 2017, has delivered nearly $40 billion since its introduction, and is forecast to provide an extra $4 billion over the next 4 years. It is fit for purpose, appropriate to generate investment, and delivers a massive return for Australian taxpayers.
But Senator Rex Patrick says there should be a major overhaul of the way gas is taxed.
My view is it is beyond reform. Every time we've attempted to change it, we've been outmaneuvered by the gas cartel. We've got to have a simple and rewarding method for taxing the gas that leaves our country. The difficulty is neither of the major parties are prepared to stand up to these gas companies to make sure that, A, we retain enough gas in our local market such that we pay a reasonable price for gas, but also to make sure that we get a proper return. Doesn't matter whether it's the Liberal government or the Labor government, both have let the Australian public down in the past.
That's Senator Rex Patrick, whose time in Parliament ends later this month, ending that report from Dan Fitzgerald looking at, well, how much money is made from gas shipped out of Australia and whether Australians are getting their fair share. You can read more about that online at abc.net.au/rural. A couple more of your texts here on the program. This one saying, I've always been a Kelpie boy, but they have to be red. I've found them the best all round with working and companionship. My current one is named Steel. Great dog name. Gleno from my way. I don't think there's a bad dog name, really. Border Collies all the way. Toby kept me warm in the tent at Gundagai last night, says Jerry. Well, good job there, Toby. Border Collie gets our vote from Mia and Finn. This one says Border Collies winning. There must be a lot of frisbee throwers listening. Border Collies every time as they can solve a Rubik's Cube. Absolutely brilliant text. Don't know if there's any factual, work behind that. Border Collie gets my vote, Warwick. Always quick learners, very obedient and faithful, says Alison from Warwick Nabil. And Hewitt Ballarat says, Border Collies rule. Another text here. Border Collies have bred them for 30 years. Well, you'd have to be in that camp then, wouldn't you, if you've been breeding them for as long as that? That's the simple question, though, today. We are asking, I'll give you the results shortly. Border Collie or Kelpie, which one is better? That's it. You've got to pick a side. We don't need you to throw Jack Russells or Blue Heelers into the mix. We're just asking Border Collie or Kelpie today on the Country Hour. You tell us which one you think is better. The text line is 0467 842 722. The reason we're talking about this today is because it's all been about Kelpies this weekend, where a Kelpie from New South Wales has taken out the top price of $27,000 at the Working Dog Auction in Casterton, all part of the Casterton Kelpie Muster. Crowds came from all over to watch demonstrations and the auction at Island Park at the celebration of working dogs. And our reporter Megan Hughes filed this report.
26,000. Look out, here it's going to go. $27,000 I sell. Betting, quickly done.
$27,000. Kimmy is a well-bred black and tan Kelpie hailing from Dubbo in New South Wales. She's 2 years and 9 months old. She fetched $27,000. Her owner, Carly O'Leary, says it'll be hard to say goodbye.
Very overwhelming, very intense up there. I got a bit emotional and hard to hold back the tears, but no, I'm very, very happy that she's gone to a good home. So
I noticed that. She must mean a lot to you.
No, she does. I'm with her every day, so they're all your best mates, every dog that you work with, and yeah, they're part of your family, and I'm just very happy that she's gone somewhere good.
Tell me a bit about her. What's she like?
So she's got a big personality, that's for sure. She's very affectionate, and yeah, she just wants to be with you, so yeah, and she definitely gives her all when she's working, so you can't ask for much more than that.
Ashley and Lachlan Meeburn from Oatlands in Tasmania won the bidding war. This is the young brother-sister duo's first working dog purchase, as Ashley Meeburn explains.
It was pretty exciting, and I'm just glad we got her. Like, yeah.
So why were you so interested in her? What did you see when you were watching the demos today?
I just really liked, just her practicality for me and really for what I wanted. Something ready to go, really practical for what I wanted, easy. And she's very lovable and friendly dog when you're not working sheep as well, which is I really like.
You guys are pretty young. Tell me a bit about your business.
So we've got a few merinos down in Tassie that we run and breed a few rams and things. And yes, so we brought a bit more land for my brother and I, and yes, it's our first Kelpie working dog purchase, and she'll be a great asset to our growing team.
They were not expecting to nab the top price.
I thought some other ones might have went for a bit more, but
Did it blow the budget?
I think she's going to be a good dog, so.
While $27,000 is an eye-watering price for a dog, it still falls short of the national record. Hoover, a Kelpie from Victoria, holds that gong at $35,200. 49 dogs were put through their paces to demonstrate their skills before being put up for auction. Casterton Kelpie Association Vice President Rob Pillmore says the animals were top quality.
So we've actually got a really wide range of dogs this year of age and skill this year, Megan. The probably one of the best varieties across a whole section of skills and age groups.
And I noticed there's some dogs come from interstate.
Yeah, no, this year we've dogs as far north as Dubbo have come down, and dogs out of the Gippsland area. We've got dogs here from Tasmania, across in the southeast of South Australia, and of course plenty of dogs from locally out of Victoria here.
The Casterton Kelpie Muster has made a name for itself. More than 10,000 people came through the door for the weekend of festivities. Association President Karen Stevens says they've never had numbers like that before.
We've had up to 8,000, so 10,000. So it just really proved to us that everybody wants to get out after 2 years of being cooped up after COVID. And we certainly saw some, you know, very happy people yesterday and getting involved in all the activities and just having a great time.
What does the Kelpie Muster mean to Casterton?
Oh, look, the committee started 26 years ago, you know, branding Casterton as the birthplace of the Kelpie, which is our naming right. We've just pushed that brand all the way through. So, you know, we want people to come to Casterton throughout the year. It drives our economy here. We know that, it, you know, the muster over the weekend puts about $1.7 million into our community. And the fact that we know that people have Casterton on their bucket list now as a place to visit is just really exciting for us.
Well, that's Casterton Kelpie Association President Karen Stevens ending that report from Megan Hughes, and that is the reason why we've been talking Kelpies versus Border Collies today, because they've been celebrating the Kelpie at Casterton. But I want to know which one's better, Kelpies or Border Collies. I have the results for you. I'll get to some of those texts in a moment. But as you just heard, $27,000 paid for a Kelpie at the Working Dog Auction in Casterton across the weekend. And on the text line, hi, Warwick, Kelpie every time for me, says Chris from Lawrence. Had a Kelpie cross border, now have a Kelpie. Very loyal, purposeful, clever, strong-willed, but wanting to please, and low maintenance. Vote one Kelpie, says Joy at Warrnambool. My dog Roy is the best mix of both Kelpie and Border Collie. He keeps me on the go. Even better is that he came from the pound, so someone else's giveaway is my best friend, says Leonie. But Leonie, see, if you've got both Kelpie and Border Collie in the same dog, I want you to pick the best bit. Is it the Kelpie part of the dog that makes Roy the best, or is it the Border Collie part? You've got to pick a side. Which glass is half full, which is half empty? You tell me. Kelpie, every day, smarter, harder working, and last all day, says Gary from Northwood. Border Collies is our vote, Helen and Lindsay. Border Collies, owners here for the past 16 years, can't go past them for an all-round friend, says Tracy at Coonamoo as well. Lots and lots of texts have come in. I've counted them all up just from the text line. If you want to know what we're picking here today, if I had a drum roll, I'd give it to you. Just from the text line, 26 votes for Kelpie, 27 votes for Border Collie, including our weatherman, Mark Adelaide. I think he's decided the poll. Border Collie wins the Country Hour text line vote today, even though Mark gave it on air. That knocks Border Collie just up 20. Jeez, that's close. Really, really close. Border Collie beating Kelpie on the text line poll. If you're not happy about that, I actually am running a poll on Twitter too. If you are on Twitter, you've got a little bit more. You've probably got another 19 hours to get in a vote there if you'd like to decide what's better, the Border Collie or the Kelpie. And I can tell you provisionally, so I don't know, what was that, 27 to 26. So we're looking at just over 50 votes on the text line. On Twitter, we're at 643 votes with 19 hours left. And at the moment, Kelpie's in front there. So is that me sitting on the fence? Probably. Probably sitting on the fence, but there you go. And some of the comments coming in from there is it's King Kong versus Godzilla. Another one saying it's a great poll, especially in light of the festival in Casterton over the weekend. This is coming from the country boy who is now responsible for a schnoodle. That from Charles. I don't even know what a schnoodle is, but that sounds magnificent. And Jessica's saying if the Kelpie doesn't win, I'm relinquishing my Australian citizenship. Well, that's up to all of you. You guys can decide. Love to hear what you think on that. You can email us at the Country Hour anytime. countryhour@abc.net.au That's it. That's the email address. Send us an email anytime you'd like. Hope you have a great afternoon and thanks for joining us today on this Queen's Birthday long weekend for the Country Hour. We'll be back same bad time tomorrow. Catch you then.